Right, hello and welcome to another episode of the Long Ball Football Podcast, a weekly podcast about all things football in Portugal. You're listening to myself, Albert, and once again, I'm joined by the main men, Kevin and Andrew. How are you doing, guys? Kevin, good weekend?
Yeah, you could say that. 6-0, could be better, could be worse.
Definitely could be a lot worse. And Andrew, another win for your boys as well. So as things stand, you know, everything's rosy. All those we'll come on to, maybe one or two little hiccups, but still.
Few concerns, but yeah, 3 points, that's the most important.
Absolutely. And another weekend of Primeira Liga football under our belts. It does feel like we're starting to get into the swing of things, which is nice. I think we all watched a couple of teams perhaps we didn't watch last weekend. I'm sure we've all learned some new stuff about different teams in and around the league. So we're going to do our best this weekend to cover as much of the action as possible, including Benfica's first game in the league of the season and much more. But let's start, as we always do, at the top of the table, which at this early stage of the season is still the reigning champion Sporting. They continued to start the season at full throttle by beating Arouca 6-0 in their first home game of the season. A scoreline undoubtedly aided by a red card for the away team, but it was still a supremely dominant performance from Sporting, which gave them another win. Two goals from Francisco Trincão, two goals from new striker Luis Suarez, and perhaps unlikeliest of all, two goals from Ricardo Mangues. And it rounded off a very enjoyable occasion for the home side. Kev, I'll come to you first. I want to ask you a question. Is what we're seeing from Rui Borges' men the very definition of tiki-taska?
You can say that. You can definitely say that. Look, I think quite a few people were concerned looking at pre-season, looking at the fact that Rui Borges was looking quite adamant about implementing his own system, moving away slightly from the very rigid sort of setup with the three centre-backs that Amorim made us used to. And whilst there is still that back three in certain aspects, I think some people were a little bit mindful about that transition, seeing how Rui Borges, who obviously was lacking experience at this up top level, how he would transition and how he would show some more ambition whilst on the ball. Because whilst last season was good enough, it was a good interim sort of job. He steadied the ship at a time where Sporting were in turmoil. There were a lot of injuries and there was not a massive gap where he could really put his mark on the team and really change a lot and expect great football. It was a survival job. And the question coming into this season is, can he dominate the ball? Can the performances be consistent throughout? Will there be drop-offs? Will there be signs showing that perhaps it's going to be a little bit more of a transitional period for him and for the side? And thus far, and of course there is a little bit of a question mark because of that red card earlier on, Sporting do look pretty much flawless as far. There's nothing that can be put against them in that performance. Arouca, bless them, because they are a good side. We did talk about them last week. We are impressed with Vasco Seabra. They have good individuals in that side. It's very difficult in Alvalade with 11 men. With 10 men, look, it was damage control and things happen. You can't really hold anything against them. I think it's a shame, if anything, that they didn't get to show their best stuff at that ground, where last season they did cause a lot of problems for Sporting. Mm-hmm. We all know how that result went. So there is that. I'm not sure there's a lot to say about the red card and the penalty. The risk is always there when a player goes up with his stud showing. If he doesn't touch the player, you'd almost make the argument for a yellow card. But with contact, it is considered dangerous play at the end of the day. So I'm not sure that the referee, as much as it is a shame, and you don't like to see players get sent off for attempts to play the ball, I'm not sure there's a lot he could have done. Mm. And other than that, there's not much else that Sporting could have done to make this performance any better, because the scoreline is convincing. You didn't really see a drop-off in the second half. They were professional about their business, kept on going for another couple of goals. The new man, Suarez, got his first couple, looked quite relieved after the second one to get one in open play. The penalty, obviously, a great move from the captain, Yilmaz, to pass that cross after he looked to be the designated penalty taker going forward. Trincão with another amazing showing, really proving himself to be one of the best players, if not the best player in the league. I'll leave that up to debate. Mangas, I think, surprising everyone with how he's stepped in. And when it was said that he was going to come in, I think a lot of people were expecting to be fourth, third choice, but obviously through circumstance, he's found himself in the 11 and he's really fitted in quite well. He's aggressive. He attacks the final third quite well, as we've seen. At Vitória, he played as a winger. So it's not too surprising to see him in those sorts of areas contributing. And yeah, two goals for each of those players, which is a little bit of a strange occurrence. Honestly, if Pedro Gonçalves had a bit of a better showing, I would have said that that was completely flawless, because even Kenda came in, really made a stake for him potentially to come into the side after Jenny was really creative, but the final product, as it often does, was slightly lacking. Kenda got two assists. Maybe there's a little bit of a question mark going into next week. Vagianidis even came in with a very good assist, a very good ball in for Mangas. So that's another good sign. Kosharash really keeps on impressing with the few minutes he's getting in, as Morita is also doing a good job. Yeah, at the end of the day, Rui Silva had his probably the least eventful game of his career. Sporting 6-0, good performance, controlling throughout, never in doubt, very professional, very good patterns of play. What else can you ask for?
Absolutely, and I agree with your assessment on the sending off as well. I don't know if you agree, Andrew, but for me, I think the right word is probably unfortunate, in a sense that obviously it is a mistake from the defender and there probably isn't much intent in it, but I don't think the referee has any option but to send a player off. And it does change the dynamic of the game, obviously. And when you are looking at a team like Sporting, playing a team like Arouca with a man advantage at home, it does kind of limit what you can really learn about the team. When I was trying to think of what did I learn about Sporting from this game, because it is only the second game of the season and we are still looking for how they're gonna play and how they're gonna look, I think Mangas was the most interesting player to look at, because like Kevin says, he might not have been the first choice left back, but it was a very, very good performance. And I think he has already outdone what I think we expected from him. And for me, part of that is about playing with his own identity. You know, we saw him play completely fearlessly and with great freedom. And I think, obviously, on the one hand, versus a 10-man Arouca, it's probably the easiest game he's going to play all season, arguably. But also, I think we saw a player playing with the kind of knows he has the backing of his manager, and it is interesting to look at that relationship with his manager, in a sense that we all just thought, oh, this is Rui Borja signing one of his guys from Vitória. But it goes back further than that. I didn't know this, but he played under Rui Borja from Mirandela in the Campeonato de Portugal, when it was the third division, in the first professional season of his career. So clearly this is a player who has the backing of his manager, has that self-belief, and went into that game not afraid, and played his own game with his own style, and really reaped the benefits. And you know, I think that could be a real positive. A player with that kind of mindset is an asset to any team, I think.
Definitely. I think he was playing more with a point to prove, not that he has a million doubters, but he's got doubters. You know, he comes in after the move away and comes in for 300,000, which is something people keep talking about. It's this thing that's kind of hanging over his head that he's going to be on the bench. This is the kind of narrative, but he seems like he's trying his best. And you saw that in the first game, and we kind of spoke about it last week, where it seemed like he was trying anything. You know what I mean? He was like, I'm going to shoot. I'm going to make this run. I'm going to try and draw past this guy. And that's a type of fearlessness that makes it really great to watch a player like that. You know, he was really impressive. And just overall, just my thoughts on the Sporting game. Yeah, 6-0 against 10 men, a hat-trick of braces. But also Arouca kind of didn't stop. They kept sort of trying to play as well.
True.
Which you could say is a credit to them, because they were brave, et cetera, et cetera. But they also got pumped 6-0. Do you know what I mean? So at what point do you sort of say, hey, maybe let's take a step back, let's sort of try and defend a bit more. But there was still like some good points in that game for him, and I think Vasco Seabra will know that the red card had a big impact on his team. He'll try and just forget this game, move on, just say just chalk it up to sort of bad luck with the red card, which it's a red card. It's unlucky, but it's a red card, and he'll just have to try and get his team thinking about the next game, which is the thing against Reav, which it's not easy, but it's definitely winnable. And Felicity Khan was super impressive. I mean, the two goals, especially that first goal, which is a goal we've seen him score before, but he does it so well. I mean, he does it better than anyone in this league. And from those two goals, I checked, he had an XG of 0.2. That was his XG for those two goals. So it's pretty astounding. I mean, it's more that first goal, I think. The second one, obviously, with some help from a deflection. But yeah, great game from him. Mangush, Suarez looks incredible, to get those two goals. And it's not just the two goals, it's what he does out of possession, the way he moves, the way he presses, all that good stuff. So yeah, it's looking good. This was a sort of easier game, but it is looking good. And I think Kevin already said it, but yeah, Vasilidis looked really sort of comfortable coming on. And that pass for the second Mangush goal was a great pass. So yeah.
Yeah, brilliant. And on Suarez, Kev, because I was listening to the Ne Preoccupi Ella Bola podcast, and those guys, they made an interesting comment. I think it was actually last week, sorry, not this week, but the comment was something about Luis Suarez, the striker that doesn't need to touch the ball to make an impact at Sporting. And I think they're obviously alluding to the fact that he didn't score in the opening day, but clearly you could see the way that he's going to play and the way he's going to fit into the system and how it's going to benefit Sporting. We obviously saw that again, but this time he was able to add goals to his game. The first one, the penalty, just to kind of break the duck. And then the second one, which I thought was a very underrated finish. I thought it was a really, really good goal, really well taken. And I think that was a it's a performance that's probably going to be overshadowed by both Trincão and Mangush in a way. But I thought it was really, really noteworthy how quickly it looks like he's fitting into this team, which on the one hand is a positive. But equally, I wonder where you think it's going to leave Konrad Harder as well, because at the moment, where is he going to get his minutes from? Because I think if you're Rui Borges and you don't have any reason to not start or even to take off Luis Suarez at the moment, the way he's started to fit in.
So it is a shame for Harder at the end of the day, because for a while last season he did deputise for Gyökeres very well at a point of injury. You can see the mentality when he comes on the pitch. He always wants to take that shot. He's hungry for the goals. He took a very bad decision in this game. He should have served his teammate when there was an opportunity to shoot. I think it shows that he is quite aware of what's happening at the moment. And look, he's a young guy. He's got his own a claim. He can claim a place in the team. He's going to be very important at stages. He doesn't have to be the main man 100% of the time, and I think perhaps it's a lack of maturity at times that might, more than the ball playing ability, which his hold up is perhaps not as good as Suarez. I'm not even sure if it's going to be that that's going to hold him back. Perhaps it's just Rui Borges' ability to keep him controlled and have that anger be perhaps, and that hunger be put into the shots and not his overall playing, his perspective on his future at the club, because it can be quite difficult to tame those sorts of personalities. And Suarez, as we've seen, it's not just the goals, but his overall play has been excellent. His hold-up play is second to none. It's better than Gyökeres was doing. And perhaps it was a smart move to transition away from that sort of ultimate focal point where everything had to flow through the player. And now we've got a player who can definitely just bring others in and create space for them. And the work that he's done off the ball, I think more impressive than that second finish, particularly that you mentioned, Albert. It was a very well taken shot. And it's very good to see from a striker who perhaps comes to a new league, is a little bit tentative at times. The sort of power that he put through it on his weaker foot is a very good sign. Obviously, ended up going in and at a very good angle. It's very promising to see. But the work that he did for that first goal, the first Mangush goal, Trincão with a touch that was a little bit heavy, ended up going in a bit loose, and he manages to get the touch before the goalkeeper with a great sprint. I
Very
think that
true.
kind of personifies the play that he will be just runs after absolutely everything and works in that regard as well. That is what will make Suarez a success as much as the finishing ability and the overall play, because the amount of times that he associates, like, just a ball that just bounces particularly off of him and he brings teammates into play in small spaces like that. It's just a very, very, very good signing. It seems early doors, of course, but a matured striker who is more selfless than your typical striker, you would say, especially when you look at the personalities in Harder and for Gyökeres.
Just before we move on, I've got another one for you, Kev. So, because we're talking about new signings and whatever. So there's a lot of talk about Humlund, who's, you know, one of your most important players, and now sort of Man United are lurking. And when a team like that starts lurking, especially because now the Baleba deal is obviously not going to happen, it seems like he might be the pick, obviously, because of his association with Ruben Amorim. Do you think Kocharashvili is the kind of player that could sort of play with Morita, or is it kind of you need to find someone else to do what Humlund does? What do you reckon?
I think you definitely have to find that sort of replacement. And it's not anything against Morita or Kocharashvili. It's just Humlund is such a leader, and he's so important out of possession. And as much as Kocharashvili, he does have that sort of bulldog mentality about him. He does really press quite well. I think he's still more of a number eight than he would be a number six. As much as both Morita and Kocharashvili, they could create quite an interesting pivot. I think just the dependence that there is on Humlund out of possession and just to keep the ball rolling and control tempo, I think you definitely have to bring someone else in. And this is more my issue than, oh, this player is not 100% to do that or this or that. I think you'd have to really readjust the dynamics of the whole team, because the ground that he covers, the way that he just slows attacks down, not even with tackles, but just the way that he knows where to be just to contain the situation. I don't know where Sporting would get another one of him. And I'm not saying that, oh, he's the best midfielder in the world. United need to get him. He resolves all of their problems. It's not even that. It's just the importance that he has within the system, the way that Sporting play, and the fact that for a while there wasn't that many senior figures other than Humlund. You'd probably be looking at Inacio or Rui Silva, who's not been at the club for that long. It would be a massive loss both on and off the pitch. And even for United, I'm not 100% sure if he's 100% what they're looking for, because Baleba is a lot more of a transitional sort of player, a lot more of a ball carrier, and Humlund is, within his own right, he's more just a defensive player. He doesn't really bring that sort of energy that it seems like United have been searching for, that sort of high intensity, which I'm pretty sure that's what they're looking for with Ugarte. But he's obviously lacking a little bit more of the ball-playing ability. I think we saw that even against Arsenal. For the people who did see that, it didn't look like Sporting Ugarte.
Yeah, no, I mean, no. Humlund is not the same as Baleba. I think it's a lot of just kind of, oh, he was coached by Amorim. It's just the same thing as Gyökeres before he went to Arsenal, right? It was linked to every Sporting player. That's how it's going to be for a while.
Absolutely. I think that's fairly unavoidable. That does actually, though, remind me of one quick Sporting transfer question before we move on, actually, that I have, Kev. And it's about the wing position, because we know that Sporting in the market for a left-sided winger. I know it's incredibly early days, so at least I'm not writing off any player, but Pedro Gonçalves has been a little bit quiet at the start of this season. Perhaps he's been a very important player for the club in the past. I'm just interested in your thoughts on that dynamic of needing something else on that side, perhaps to maybe balance out what they have on the right side with Trincao and Kenda and even Jenny.
Yeah, I think it's quite important that Sporting do bring in a couple of reinforcements, at least one, just because as much as the starting lineup, it does look quite settled at the moment with Pedro Gonçalves, Trincao and Jenny. And obviously you do have the possibilities of Kenda. Other than that, I think you do see a drop in quality, because escaping Kenda, you'd probably have to look at Bragança when he comes back, or Simões to play in that 10 position, and it's not 100% natural. And obviously you have Harder as the bona fide number nine. He did come on and he has played with Gyökeres in the past, creating that sort of two pure strikers, but It's not 100% fluid. It's definitely not the same sort of dynamic. So Sporting will be looking at a couple of other reinforcements, I'm sure. Yedermay from Espanyol, he's been the one that's linked. That looks like it's very, very ambitious because of the price tags that have been thrown about. I'm not sure Sporting are going to spend 30, 35 million at this stage on a winger. It would shock me, especially whilst Jota Silva has been the whole window has been linked, and it's a far inferior number. Rui Borges is a fan of him. I'm not 100% satisfied with that sort of move because I think you're looking at two players with very different characteristics. So it doesn't make 100% sense that those are two names that are put like side by side. But yeah, I think really to answer the question, Sporting are looking for someone. Who that player will be is very difficult to say at this stage. But it looks like what would make more sense at this stage would be that sort of dribble type player, a bit like Szczęsny, a bit like Kenda, but probably right footed because, as has probably been mentioned on this show, and I think I've mentioned a few times when I've come on, Sporting are usually left footed central, so it would make more sense in general. So yeah, probably expect someone, probably not Yedermaye, potentially Jota Silva.
Yeah, I think Jota Silva would just be more of a body because you'd think you want someone more technical. I would have said someone more technical, but then Ricard Mangas has done really well and he's like not number one technical. Do you know what I mean? But yeah, I think it's not a bad move, Jota Silva. He'll bring you something. But yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah, and the last time Rui Borges brought in one of his old guard, they worked pretty well. So why not try the same thing again, presumably with the same results. All right, gents, let's move on and talk about Porto, who backed up their opening day victory against Vitória with a 2-0 win at Gil Vicente. Although it was a much less seamless affair, shall we say, than the first game, not least because an injury to striker Samu left the Spanish striker in tears on the Porto bench. Looks like he could be out for, at the very least, a few weeks. But it was also in part, I thought, to a Gil Vicente side who proved to be a pretty regular thorn in Porto's side throughout the game. That said, goals either side of half-time from Froholt and Pepe meant that Porto got their second win of the season. Andrew, not everything here went to plan. It wasn't quite like the first game of the season, but in many ways, the 3 points are the most important.
Definitely. I mean, we didn't start with the same intensity as we did against Vitória. And then once the Samu injury happens, even less so, you could just see the drop off. And, you know, Vicente were making life quite difficult for us. But we just didn't have that same zip, and everyone seemed a bit hesitant. And I think, you know, credit to Vicente, they sort of made that happen in a way. But, you know, two good goals. I think Froholt's header was the sort of the side header where it hits the side of his head, but a fantastic cross from Gabri Vega. Like really, when you talk about corners at the front post, that's exactly the perfect sort of cross. And then Zaidu assisting, and you know my thoughts on Zaidu. We've spoken about it, but he had a pretty good game actually. I was a bit worried when I saw him on the on the starting lineup, but he did what he had to do. A good assist, another goal for Pepe. It looks like Pepe's sort of this rebirth of his continues. You know, he looks like he's finally scoring goals. I mean, he's always been good with the ball. He's always kind of been technically gifted, able to run at players, good at 1v1s, etc. It was the end product that really he struggled with, and he was hot and cold in that way for a long time. And I think it's really helped him the way the midfield play now, and also having Alberto Costa there. He just seems more comfortable in on that wing now. Alberto Costa was pretty good, although he gave the ball away. There was one really bad one where he tried to do a back heel in our own half, right on the left-hand side, which is just ridiculous, and lost the ball, and then it was a corner. So I think he just has those kind of lapses. But he was, he's really good, better than João Mário. It's a heck of an upgrade in my eyes. The most important thing is the 3 points. I think Farioli's probably learned some stuff about this team now that he maybe didn't know before. Some of the limitations of some players, and Borja Sainz, for example, he had a really sort of poor game, especially after Samuel went out. I think once you have Luke de Jong playing there, not pressing the way Samu does, then you've got defenders sticking around a lot more, and then you don't have the space you need on that wing. So that was an issue for them. And you could see the difference in the team with Luke de Jong. As good of a striker as he is and experienced as he is, he doesn't have that energy. He doesn't have that physicality that Samu has. So that is a big concern. You know, the muscle tear, that's the report at the moment. He will be out for the game against Sporting, which is a concern because it's a whole different kettle of fish if Samu's playing against the Bust, whereas Luke de Jong versus the Bust and Gonçalo Inácio, it's a little bit easier for them, let's say. Although he's a wily one, Luke de Jong, it won't be the same sort of physicality and speed to contend with. But overall, happy. You know, got the 3 points. That he just has to keep going. Froholt had a really good game. I thought he was good on the ball, good running, doing all the stuff that we saw in preseason. So yeah, and Rodrigo Moura sighting, which everyone was very happy about. I thought he did pretty well when he came on, and we'll see.
Yeah, Andrew. So I think it's worth sticking on the Samu point just a little bit more because you're so right to point out that obviously there's the concerns with losing a key player to injury, but it's about how much it changes the dynamic of the team, which I think is the biggest worry because, you know, we saw how important he's going to be to the way Ferrioli wants to play in that first game. He was the protagonist of that game. He was the talisman of the team. And, you know, Luke de Jong, we said a good signing brings experience, but you're so right to point out that from a playing style perspective, this could be a very big change that Porto potentially had to deal with for, if not weeks, potentially even a few months, and how big a kind of issue that could be to the team.
Well, Farioli's going to make some adjustments to sort of counter that, I think. And you kind of saw it towards the end of the Gilles Sint game where you had Froholt playing a little bit higher up. Now, that's not always going to work because then you're just leaving more space in the midfield. But he was trying to get Froholt to sort of help in that press because Luke de Jong just doesn't have the legs for it. So there's going to be some adjustments. We just have to see what the sort of long-term adjustment is. And long-term is like 6 weeks, but 6 weeks is a lot of football. So, yeah, something will have to be done. He can't set up the way he's been setting up and hope that it works out because it's going to be very difficult to get the team playing the way he wants with that intensity with Luke de Jong as the sort of the initial presser from the front.
Absolutely, Kev. Obviously, the one thing I said at the top of this section, which I think is very true, was that Gilles Vicente were able to do something that Vitória weren't, which was impose themselves on the game a lot more. And obviously, there were, like we just discussed, helping hands. I think when Samu went off, I think they really took advantage of that kind of the lull in momentum and the shift in Porto's playing style. But they had multiple good chances, I thought, and they caused a lot more problems. So, what were they able to do that Vitória weren't?
I think that Gilles Vicente looked a lot more aggressive. Vitória really, they did look out of shape. They looked out of sorts. They looked lacking match fitness throughout. As much as Porto did really swarm them, and as Andrew said last week, Porto looked on top form and they really went with intent. Gilles Vicente, their press was a little bit more effective, I found. Look, Seydou, his technical ability has always been called into question. He's not a player known to be that technically refined. He did struggle a little bit lower in the pitch. Albert Costa, as much as he does go forward very well and he is an upgrade on João Mário, I thought he's not 100% comfortable. As mentioned, there were a couple of losses of possession. I think he's not too comfortable doing that sort of role. They look like Martin Fernandes was doing from the left-hand side last week. I think that's a massive loss, just looking at the way that Porto play out and then obviously begin to sustain pressure. I don't know what they'll do to sort of rectify that, whether it's playing a centre back there, the options aren't that many. Whether Francisco Moura can kind of help out, I'm not too sure he's that sort of player again. I think it's a little bit too similar to Albert Koch in that way that a little bit better going forward, perhaps, or in advanced areas. That'll be a difficult one to sort out in the next couple of weeks. Or maybe Pepe dropping back, which would be a little bit of a shame considering that now this is when he's got that sort of final third impact. We will see. Gil Vicente, going back to them, I do like the look of Everton down the right-hand side. It looks like a very solid right back. I think it's a shame they didn't get perhaps a little bit more of a look in whilst he was at Vitória, perhaps looking at the past. He does look quite complete for that sort of side, and Gil Vicente as always. They do tend to make the game quite difficult at their ground. Marseille is never a very easy place to visit, typically. The midfield, Zekarl, one of the Zekarls, I should say, because there's two of them. I think he'd had a decent game, decent enough on the ball. He's a little bit less physical than the likes of Bamba, who I think Gilvicente could have done with in that sort of environment, considering that there were times that Porto did look quite flustered. And Cáceres, I think they had decent games, everything considered. I'm very impressed with Luis Esteves. I think he's Gilvicente's standout. Very good technical ability. I'm almost surprised that he's playing as advanced as he is, because further back, he looks like he really pulls the strings. So that might be something to look for in the near future. And I think more than what Gilvicente did, I think it's kind of how Porto responded. And I don't think it's a very good sign that you see the likes of Diogo Costa near the end of the first half really losing his head and having to be restrained by Bednarek in a way. I think that's a little bit concerning, because we tended to kind of attribute that behavior to Samuel at times, being a little bit of a hothead, having those emotions run high when he's a little bit frustrated. Diogo Costa really could have been close to maybe two yellows for dissent, which would have been a first, that he was really, really upset. So that would be a little bit concerning, just because Gilvicente did have a couple of periods in the game where they put Porto under some real pressure. So as much as that would be a concern, other than the phases of play where perhaps things didn't work out, because at an early stage, you can kind of expect that for Farioli's side. I think as much as that is a standout, I would also say that it is very good that they managed to get that goal early in the second half as a response. As much as from then on, it wasn't a perfect second half showing, that was very important. And I think that would also be a counterbalance to, like, okay, the end of the first half was not brilliant, but at least they saw the reaction at the start of the second. So yeah, Porto got the points at the end of the day. Good performances once again from Bednarek, from Pepe. Gabri Veiga, I think, was the standout in this one. Froholt, as always, is going to be the key man. It wasn't perfect, but then again, it doesn't have to be, because even though it wasn't perfect, it's a huge improvement from last season, and the 3 points are there.
Absolutely. And just on Gilvicente, I think, again, another team that we didn't have time to touch on our season preview show, but another team who we have seen good things from in recent years, but I think it's fair to say that kind of cycle of players that got them some success, the likes of Kanya Fujimoto and those type of players is kind of rolled over a little bit. They still have, I mean, they still have some great players. They still have Andrew in goal. I mean, how that guy hasn't been picked up by a bigger club yet is beyond me, because I think he's an excellent keeper. And with Cesar Peixoto in charge, I think they have a manager who has a strong desire to prove himself, and I think has shown at least some ability that he can back it up with. I think he's another manager just kind of on the cusp of having that bit of success, which I think would improve his stature at still a very young age. Perhaps he's just looking for that little bit of consistency that is not always afforded to these managers in the smaller clubs in Portugal. Maybe he might have had that with Gilvicente. I'm not predicting spectacular things for them this season, but I feel confident that they won't be in trouble like they were at times last season. I feel like there's enough quality in the squad, enough experience, and maybe a few teams are below them who will be struggling. That will kind of give them that base to build on. And it's been a decent start to the season. A win over Nacional in the first game, a decent performance against Porto, a big game coming up against Famalicão, because Famalicão have been doing well. So interesting to see how that goes. That'll be an interesting game to keep an eye on this weekend. But I definitely kind of have my fingers crossed for a positive season for them. Andy, before we move on, similarly to how we ended the sporting section, I just want to get your thoughts on maybe the kind of the rest of the window for Porto, because still linked with players, particularly in the defensive area. We know they're linked with one or two left backs, one or two further defensive reinforcements, and maybe potentially, do you think this injury with Samu might perhaps shift their hand a little bit in the transfer market, or do you think that's probably a step too far to go for another striker?
And going for another striker would be expensive, and that's something we can't really afford at the moment. I think the defensive reinforcements will come. It seems like they're quite intent on bringing at least one more defensive player in, maybe two if they can, depending on price. But that's definitely needed. The striker problem, I mean, Dennis Gull's still around. and
True.
Luke de Jong. I think Farioli is just going to have to try and make it work. You know, if you really have to, you can kind of tweak things a bit and have your more sort of attacking players playing a bit more forward. But yeah, I don't think we have the money to go and try and get someone in, maybe a loan from somewhere, some kind of, you know, wheeling and dealing kind of loan. But I don't really see that happening.
No, and sorry, lastly, before we move on, you did mention, of course, Rodrigo Mora. What do you think we can read into that cameo, both in terms of how he's kind of prepared to respond this season, and maybe what influence he can have over under Farioli, excuse me, because he came on and obviously he looked fantastic. You know, he had great quality, and I think even in a short cameo, he showed that he's still got a lot to offer.
Well, I like to think that maybe it's the whole world that's overthinking the Rodrigo Moura thing, and he's not. He's
True.
probably just like, you know what? I'm going onto the field now, and I'm just going to do my thing. That's what you hope, you know, that he just carries on working hard, trying to get into the team, trying to prove himself. And he did well. He's not, you know, doesn't seem like he's throwing his toys out the pram about this. And I think if he just keeps his head down, does the work, his chance will come. You know, the way things are going, he's having to rotate now, he's having to bring players in, and there's a few of the new signings that maybe struggled in that last game, Borja Sainz particularly. So I don't think it's that big a deal. I think now he's played, it's not like some personal thing where Farioli doesn't like him or he doesn't like Farioli. I think it just is what it is. He's going to play, he just has to keep doing his thing, and we'll see plenty of him this season.
Absolutely, and we look forward to it very much. All right, Jess, let's move on because this weekend we had our first look at Benfica in the league. Obviously, they beat Estrela Amadora 1-0 away from home. Benfica, I think, have looked pretty good in the Champions League. They in their qualifying campaign, they beat Nice over two legs, which I think was a good result for them. But it wasn't entirely convincing against Estrela. Benfica struggled, I thought, to create clear-cut chances. They could have conceded a number of times as well, had Estrela been able to take maybe one of the two or three very good chances of their own. It could have been a different game. But in the end of the day, a 59th-minute penalty from Pavlidis got Benfica to win. But yeah, Kevin, I'll come to you first. In many ways, I think. Obviously, good to get a result, but I think Benfica fans will want to see improvement based on what we saw in this game.
Yeah, Benfica's on Twitter were not happy despite the result. And I really cannot blame them because on another day, Estrela do win that game. They overall, I felt, had the better chances. Perhaps big shots did not come from them. But in terms of chance creation, I think that Estrela had better and perhaps even more at certain stages. Benfica just looked a lot more of the same to me. And I think it's probably even helped by, and I'm going to quote a famous or what's coming a famous interview from Lage saying, creative players, I don't need those sort of thing, kind of dismissing the need for that. It's just like, I think it's absolutely criminal because you see, even with Sheldrup on the pitch, not a lot flowed through him. And they are crying out for some sort of inspiration both down the right-hand side and especially through the middle. I mean, playing with two forwards and expecting them to come back and try and help play forward or have Pavlidis go in those sorts of mazy runs that you don't really expect from a centre forward is baffling to me, especially when Rijs, and as much has been made of his potential and his quality in Brazil, it's known that South American football is a little bit more open than it is what he's going to find, at least in the Portuguese league to begin with, especially against the likes of Estrela, who were closing the pitch very well in that 5-5-3-2. There's not that space for Rijs to really go on those runs, and he doesn't really have the incisive passing ability at this stage that perhaps is being looked at for Barenice, and he's a bit more of a defensive player. Who in this team is really going to unblock a defence? And apart from a few passes from Dahl, who had a decent performance, I felt, and put some vertical balls forward who that really tested the defense in a sort of way, or individual plays from Pavlidis or maybe Aljans in behind the defense, obviously playing a little bit off that right-hand side. Usually he is someone who tries to force things forward, but again, not a creative player. I don't see how Benfica don't have more issues going forward against other sides just because they do look a little bit slow. They do look a little bit lacking inspiration in certain moments in the game, especially in controlled attack. And it's baffling that Blaj doesn't look to try and rectify that and bring in a big name that really counters this sort of wave, and that is really a someone who can unlock a defense with one pass, one shot, one dribble. It's baffling because that was a poor performance, all things considered. It did not look at the level of Porto or Sporting. And again, Strela looked very impressive, and we're going to get into them in a minute, I'm sure. But even the likes of Jovan, who I think we're quite familiar with after his time at Sporting, obviously injuries had his impact. He perhaps wasn't the most consistent when he was at Sporting for that reason, a little bit of a hot and cold player. Jovan's attempt at creating and his work as the focal point of Strela as a midfielder now, let's not forget that. It was more than any Benfica player did. And I think that's quite concerning because as much as we can say that, okay, Benfica, they do look like they're controlling games. The Otamendi and Antonio Silva, particularly Antonio Silva, is looking very good at the moment. It's not all doom and gloom, obviously. Brandon Scherer looks like a good signing. I'm not displeased with what I've seen from Ivanovic. I think it's just Blaj is limiting the potential of what Benfica could be. And I think recruitment is lacking at this stage. And all things considered, Benfica should be dominating the way that Sporting did, the way that Porto has at times. The fact that Benfica aren't, huge responsibility has to be placed on both the manager and the board at this point. And it's a very, very crucial point for things to start going well because there are elections soon and it has not been a good sign so far. And it's a lot more concerning the fact that at the end of the game, Large, with a little bit more of his over-performative sort of style, going to the fans and kind of giving it a couple of fist pumps. And I don't think that's the sort of mentality that Benfica want to see. And I don't think that's the sort of mentality that is going to fix the problems that are very clear to Benfiquistas. As much as the games in the Champions League qualifiers have gone well, going forward, I don't think it's enough. So far, I'm not that impressed.
Yeah, 100%. And Andrew, this issue with creativity is clearly sort of glaringly obvious, or at least it is a lot more now after this game against Estrella. And I have to say, I've been fairly generous and open in giving credit to Bruno Lage in some of the things that I think he's good at. So I do think it's a fairly smart choice for manager of Benfica at this point in time in terms of his experience and what have you. But I definitely agree with what Kevin's saying about. Surely the either inability to or not wanting to address this issue of creativity in the team is now becoming a real problem. Even over the summer, I've been quite surprised by some of the players they've been happy to let go. And you know, Atletico was on the bench and obviously didn't make an impact in this game and seems to be on his way out as well. My question would be where is this all going? What is the plan? Because I think that would be what was worrying me at the moment for Benfica, because I think it does. I mean, listen, maybe I'm completely wrong, but it does look like there's a big problem at the club and nobody is prepared to address it.
I'm not sure what the idea is with bringing in these midfielders. You bring in Ivanovic, who I thought looked really good. His hold-up play is really good. He looks like a tidy sort of player. But for the Ivanovic money, you add a few million euros more, and you could have got Roger Fernandez, who would have been sort of an ideal player. So that sort of price tag that they put on him, you know, the Braga put on him, is looking pretty good now when you're sort of. You've got a problem on that right-hand side. And I think the right-hand side is a huge issue. You know, we saw in this game, it was kind of like a 4-4-2 almost, where you have Aljunas playing on the right mid. And like Kevin rightly said, Aljunas is a player that forces it. He tries, but he's not a creative player. But he's the guy that was really trying to do something. You know, Richard Rios, as good as he is, and Enzo Barranquilla, as promising as they both look, these aren't creative players. These are players that will sort of just do what they did very well. But just do what they did, and there's nothing going forward. I thought they were so poor. I really thought they were poor. I don't know what the idea is with this recruitment. I don't know if they're buying players with the idea of selling them, you know, buying players that are strikers and players that are sort of midfielders that you know will sell well. I don't know. Why would you not fix these glaring problems. It's not like Di Maria left yesterday. Do you know what I mean? This has been a thing that they knew was coming. You know, unless they thought they were going to sell Pavlidis, I don't know. But I think they've had a pretty poor summer in terms of in terms of fixing these issues. They fixed the midfield issue, which was a problem, but then you lose Kökçü, obviously goes, and then you've got Postecoglou's on the way out. So, you've got a few other things to resolve. I didn't think Sheldrup looked terrible, but he's never really impressed me too much since being at Benfica. He always seems just a little bit off it, not as confident as he should be, because he's clearly a player with ability. I think Kevin was right in pointing out it looks like Bruno Lage's attitude at the moment is, I mean, we've seen him do this before, right? But his attitude is very much like, yeah, look at us, yeah, we did it. It's not the right way to approach this sort of difficult period where you're not playing very well. It doesn't seem like you know the way forward. As obviously as a Porto fan, this makes me smile, but you just wonder what they're going to do, because they don't look up to the level of Sporting and Porto so far this season.
Yeah, and it's even more baffling when it does seem like an issue of their own making. Like you said, they knew Di Maria was going to leave for a very long time, surely. So they had the time to replace him. They go into the beginning of this season with their two best kind of options on the wing being Bruma and Aktürkoğlu. Aktürkoğlu, who's shown a good ceiling, like good top up performances, but inconsistency. Bruma, who I think is a very good player for this level, fine. But then he gets injured, a very major injury, again, quite a few weeks ago now. Aktürkoğlu's been unsettled for some time, and the rumours of him leaving have been going on again for quite a few weeks now. And they end up in a situation where the only options they have to use on the wings are Schlaederup, Prestiani, and Rollheiser. I'm not sure if I'm missing any. Oh, and Gouveia. With the greatest of respect, none of those players have ever proven that they have the level to play for Benfica week in, week out in the Premier League. So it's clearly a big issue. And also bearing in mind that Bruno Lage goes into this game playing, as you say, Andrew, Arjen is on one wing, Schlaederup on the other, and he doesn't bring on another winger until the 70th minute. Was it Prestiani or was it or Rollheiser, one of them, and then he brings the other ones on in the 90th minute, and you think, well, at this point, what message is that sending to the players that you've got and the way you want to play? It does seem like a bit of a mess. It's well, a bit of a mess. It does seem like quite a big mess, and it is again, even from a neutral perspective, I know Kevin and Andrew are doing their best to remain unbiased. From my perspective, from a neutral perspective, I find it a shame because these aren't problems that have just crept up on them, and it's not like they don't have the means to fix them. It does seem like somewhere along the line it's this kind of choice or planning that's gone wrong. But yeah, that's Benfica. I mean, maybe we should leave Benfica and move on to Estrela. I know you both have a lot to say about Estrela. Kev, I'll come to you first. I know you talked about Jovan, obviously, and I think Estrela is a team that a lot of people kind of have perhaps a slight soft spot for. Maybe that's just me, but they've struggled in recent seasons. I think ever since they've been promoted, it's been about trying not to finish in the bottom two, basically. And so far, that's exactly what they've been able to do. How do we feel about this season? Obviously, this performance was very good. I think we saw them put in a very good performance against Porto last season as well. So they're able to kind of get these performances out of them from somewhere. So who knows if this will be a one-off. Obviously, a point against Australia on the first day of the season, now also looking, I think, like quite a good result as well in retrospect. So maybe there's more optimism to be had here, because they don't have the money that some other teams have. They don't have the squad that some other teams have. But I think, they have tried in the transfer market, and they've got at the very least an interesting squad of players.
100%. In the past, Strela looks like they've gone a little bit more of the physical route to try just to outstrength their opponents, keep it quite basic at the back. Going forward, they've had a little bit of experience, at least Liga Portugal experience at the front, and that's kind of bailed them out at times. It's not been anything too inspirational. It's not been anything over too like too exciting. This season, I'm not 100% sure what to expect. Haven't seen them. I've only seen them in this game. I haven't seen them against the likes of the teams like your Casapias, the teams that they're going to have to beat to really make a mark on this division. But based on this game, I was really impressed. And I was really impressed with a couple of signings that they've made along the lines of Xhende and Meireles, both from Benfica and Porto B, respectively. I like the look of them when they were at youth level, and I think they're two very good signings to go across with Gastel and Godoy, for example, or perhaps play a little bit further back because their system, as I'll get into in a second, is a little bit peculiar in the sorts of players that they place in certain roles. I think that it's a good mixture. They've got a little bit of youth coming in, which is quite exciting. I think it's something that we haven't perhaps seen as much from them for. It's been more of that experienced player coming in that we've known in the past at the latter stages of their career. I think this is a little bit more of a balance. And obviously, looking into this season, before these sorts of games, you don't really get a look of the likes of Lopes Cabral or Chernev or Chapu. We need to see them to actually believe and then gauge what they'll bring. I was very impressed by Chapu. Yeah, it made some very good last-ditch tackles and clearances and blocks. I think he was a standout performer, 100%. Lopes Cabral, he impressed me going forward. Very energetic down the wing. I think he attacks space quite well. Fabio Ronaldo is one that we're very, very familiar with from his time at Rewar. I think he's a great player. He came inside a couple of times from a left wing back role and made things happen. I think it was a decent performance from him, and there's potential for him to become more consistent. Jovin, as I said, is definitely the vocal point. The amount of times he burst forward and really risk that final ball, that pass, really take on that man. And defensively, he was sound, won a lot of duels. And it's very interesting in this 5-3-2, he's playing as a left centre midfielder. So at times, he's just in that left channel with quite a lot of license to go forward. And he had a very good game. Marcus Abraham, as Porto B followers will be quite familiar with, he was on the other side. I don't think he was as effective, but I think that's very promising against the more modest sides of the league. Overall, I think it was quite a decent showing. I wasn't impressed with the likes of Chernev or Gastel or really Godoy because, look, there were a couple of failed attempts to do a lot more at times in that game. Chernev, I think he was the weaker of all three central defenders. Gastel and Godoy, they both missed a couple of very good chances. So I think the likes of Kikaj or maybe one of those two younger lads that I've mentioned before could really make an impact on this team. But look, I think it's a little bit more of a question mark against Strela. And that question is, can they go on and do more? I think for the first time since they've come up, there is that potential to do that. And at the base, the last player that I'll mention, Moreira, I think he's really, apart from Javen, he's going to be an important player just because he seems to be the sort of brain behind the operation. As much as Javen is the captain with the armband, I think Moreira, as much as that, is really a leader in the sort of way that he held possession at times, calmed things down, and then Strela hit Benfica on the break. I think for the first time, we could see Strela perhaps go from that sort of 12th, 11th, maybe push 8th, 7th. We'll see. I think there's that potential.
Yeah, listen, I hope it's very much the case. I think you obviously point out some very interesting players there. I mean, if you told me a couple of years ago that Jovan Cabral would be the captain of Estrela Amadora playing central midfielder, I would have been very surprised. Yet here we are, and he made a very good impact. I think you are right to point out that the strikers, missing the chances that they have was a shame. And when he brings Kikaj on, you think Kikaj is gonna be the one to take the chance and cement his name back in the starting 11. Sadly, it wasn't to be. He also missed a big chance at the end. Andrew, what do you make of Estrela? Because I don't know whether I kind of treat them perhaps with too much of an English mindset. When I look at the club as a whole and I think about the potential it has, I look at a club with a larger than average fan base for lower down in the Premier League. I look at a club in Lisbon who obviously has the power to kind of attract players on that basis. And I think there is real potential there. Maybe I'm kind of being a bit too romantic, but it's not quite happened in the last few seasons. But yeah, what did you think of how they played in this game?
Saw a real improvement so far from last season. They had some good games last season, but they were poor pretty broadly. But in this game, they were really good. They created a lot of great chances, and yes, they were wasteful with them. But creating all those chances and against a team like Benfica, that's really promising. That's really encouraging for Joseph Ferreira and for you know the fans to see their team playing like that and sort of going toe to toe with a team like Benfica. Yeah, the Jovan Cabral sort of rebirth as a midfielder, it's great because he's a player we've known about for a long time and it hasn't really worked out. He had those injury problems. But to reinvent him in this way, you know, credit to Joseph Ferreira for that, but also credit to him for he looks in better shape than I can even remember. I can't remember the last time he looked this in shape, the way he was pressing, the way he was running with the ball. He seemed really confident. And another thing I like about this Australia team, which I noticed in this game, is no matter where they have a free kick from, they're going to shoot that thing. So it could be from 50 yards, 45, 50 yards. And that's something that doesn't happen much anymore. And I like that. I like that they, you know, they're kind of putting the ball down and saying, let's see what happens, you know, against Trubin, who's a pretty damn good goalkeeper. So yeah, I think generally very good performance. We haven't spoken about the penalty, and I don't want to go on about whether, you know, it's a penalty, whether it's not a penalty. I think it was the softest of penalties, though. That's just my sort of take. You know, the people that were upset about the penalty, you know, you can't blame them. It was really a soft penalty, and to sort of for Estrela to lose that game from a penalty like that, after all the hard work and how well they played and all the good stuff they did, that's a bitter pill to swallow. And you could see how dejected they were at the end of the game. They were really, you could tell they were all like, you know what, we should have got something from this game. But I think it looks like it might be a good season for them, a promising season. They've got a pretty good team. You know, Kevin's already gone through a lot of their sort of good players, but I think it'll be interesting to see how Fabio Cornel just sort of gets into this team and how he adjusts to this team. He's a, you know, a good player. We've seen him for who you are for years. But yeah, I mean, much, much better than last season.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think it is fair to describe the penalty as soft. It's one of those when you just keep seeing it over and over again, slowed down, and it's like you can just tell a referee is going to give it. And it's not to say that it's not, a penalty or it's not contact or it's not whatever it is. But yeah, it's definitely on the softer end of a penalty. But yeah, listen, maybe Estrella should have taken their chances if we're going to start putting, big
For sure,
expectations on
for
them.
sure.
And just so right to point about the free kicks. I mean, for me, that was the chance. Forgive me, I'm terrible with names, but the one where the free kick comes in, Trubin parries it, and there's a look in a goalkeeper's eyes, isn't there, when he knows the ball's about to go in. It's that kind of, ah, damn. And he had that look in his eyes, but the header went wide. So there it was. It never happened, but very positive start to the season for Estrella based on not just this game, but definitely the game against Estrella as well. All right, gents, we haven't got lots of time left, but we should try and at least touch on a couple more games. And we should discuss Braga, of course, because it was a second 3-0 win of the season for Braga, this time away at Alverca, who remain without a point so far this season. It was three first half goals from youngster Diego Rodrigues, captain Ricardo Horta, and then the penalty from El Ouazzani, which proved to be decisive. But the second half was a kind of story in itself, in my opinion, quite chaotic, had a bit of an end-to-end feel about it. Alverca seemed to get behind Braga's back line multiple times with a very simple ball over the top, but it didn't matter in the end, and the game ended 3-0. Kev, another big win in the league. But for me, I don't know if you would say this is too harsh, but I think perhaps there are one or two questions defensively for Braga.
100%. Look, I gave Braga a little bit of a question mark at the beginning of the season because I was not impressed at all with the first games. I think since then they've improved with each showing. The questions I initially had, the manager has definitely resolved them. They look a lot more threatening down the corridors. They've made some very good plays in this game, particularly where they play from out to in, and they were very incisive. And look, the Alverca goalkeeper, he'll have better days. I think that did have a little bit of an impact on the final result at the end of the day. Perhaps he was a little bit harsh, at least on his performance, because he is a better goalkeeper, André Gomes, than what was shown.
Well, I'm glad to hear
That's
that because
football.
he definitely looks pretty shaky.
Yeah. So, look, he was highly rated in the Benfica Academy, and I like the look at him. So I think. I hope he'll do better in the future. It was a little bit of a baptism of fire, it seemed, is what it is. I'm very impressed by the double pivot in particular, Gorbi and Rodrigues. Rodrigues, I think, had a much better game than he had previously. Down the flanks, I've already said, Leal and Jorge, they have to be the focal point of this side, and they look very good going forward, both of them with an assist. Defensively, I think it's always been our question mark with Braga. As you mentioned, they were really torn apart a lot in that second half with just isolated passes over the top, nothing too elaborate. And it is quite concerning because you look at the likes of Paulo Oliveira. He couldn't play a high line when he was at Sporting 10 years ago in the Champions League. Why is he doing it now? It's really, really concerning because Vitor Carvalho is not that physical specimen. And Bright MB is not... It's not sort of Pepe or even Diomande or even Tomás Araújo or Antonio Silva in terms of like recovery pace and that sort of know-how is going to be a little bit of concern when they do take initiative of games in that sort of sense. And it's quite concerning just because Alverca looks so disjointed, which, again, surprising considering they made 1,700 signings. But this is the thing. If you don't look 100% assured against this type of side, they can just break you with one singular pass where, look, Alverca don't need that sort of connection and chemistry and everything figured out just to have isolated plays, which is just a matter of two free players and two free touches. It's very concerning because what will teams with a little bit more ambition and that are a little bit more solidified and assured at this stage, what are they going to do against Braga if they're taking initiative? And how will Braga protect against that? Will there be a need for a little bit more of a defensive focus, perhaps taking one of these more offensive players? Because end of the day, Gorbi is quite an end-to-end sort of player. Rodrigues does have a bit about him going forward. Pau Vitor and Ozani at the same time, two forwards, and still having Lelo bombing forward, Orta and Roger, who are primarily that those sorts of incisive, creative players. Perhaps there's going to have to be a little bit more of a focus than just how Vitor Carvalho is used to try and kind of counteract this. I don't want to be all too doom and gloom on Braga because they have looked good. They did dominate this game. They did probably deserve the win and we have a couple of goals, but Alverca, they probably deserved one or two as well. And they did not look impressive, like, apart from this sort of choppy end-to-end sort of game where they had isolated moments, which isn't anything to be, oh, this player was amazing or this manager did really well. I think it's just game state and individual quality, if anything. So I think those are huge concerns for both sides, just how do Braga protect themselves a bit better because they were exposed and by a poor side who will have to gel very, very quickly if they don't want more of that happening because they're playing with fire and they don't have the means to play with it yet at all.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, it sounds like, you know, we're talking about a Braga 3-0 loss, not a 3-0 win. So, you know, I don't want to be too negative about them winning a game, but I am going to carry on for a little bit because I'm sure Andrew has some thoughts on this as well. I'm going to say I do not like Vitor Carvalho at right back. I don't like it at all. The number of 1v1 chances that they just gifted to Alverca for no reason was bizarre. It was a good job they got their business done in the first half, which again, credit to them, I think they did fairly well. Good goal from Rodrigues, great finish, but keeper has to do better for me. Without wanting to be too harsh, good finish from Ricardo Horta. But anyway, I'm not gonna get too carried away. But yeah, Andrew, I mean, what did you make of it all? Because on the one hand, to go into 3-0 lead at halftime is very good, but it just seemed, I'm not sure what the word is, perhaps a little bit reckless or a little bit naive from Braga at times.
I mean, I don't think Braga were amazing in this game, despite the scoreline. And, you know, you score the three goals in the first half. You really just need to focus on controlling the game in the second half and just seeing out the result. And yeah, they didn't concede any goals, but they made a real meal of it. It just didn't feel like they had much control in that second half. And, you know, this is an Alverca team that are still trying to meld together their 29 or I don't know, it must be 30 transfers. I think there's one a day now that they brought in. So they did look a little bit out of sorts, but they did create some good chances, especially in the second half. But Braga kind of let them. And I think the reason why we're sort of going back and forth and it seems like we're being really harsh on Braga is because we haven't seen them really put in a performance this season. I mean, it's only been two games, but against two teams that they should be beating, they did beat, but they didn't look convincing defensively in both games. And, Avarca's chances were all very much, kind of transitional attacks and things that kind of simple balls over the top. And Hornacek made a couple good saves as well. And I think he's going to be a big part of helping Braga through this kind of tricky defensive, stage that they're going through now, where they're trying to figure out how they're going to do this going forward. But Braga also still trying to figure out. Carlos Vinicius is still trying to figure it out himself. They have a good team. This wasn't convincing, despite it being 3-0. It gave me a lot more. I have a lot more questions now about this Braga team, and now I feel like I need to see more of how they deal with tougher teams that will put those chances away in the second half, and then they have to go
Respond, yeah.
again. Yeah, then they have to go again, and they have to respond. But yeah, I mean, two games, two wins—that's what they'll say. And Carlos Vinicius will say, check the scoreboard. Here we are, even though it hasn't been perfect. They've done what they had to do. So yeah.
And yeah, I think it is a very, very fair point that you make that. Listen, there's a lot of rotation happening in this Braga team at the moment, and they are, of course, juggling European qualification, which they are so far doing successfully. All credit to them as well. I mean, if you look at the five substitutions they made in this game, the players that came off the bench: Victor Gomes, Gustavo Lagerbielke, Rodrigo Salazar, Mario Dorgelez, and Gabri Martinez, all players that you could make an argument should be starting for this team. So, in their defense, there's clearly kind of still a lot of juggling to do before they can get their most their best starting 11 on the pitch. Maybe Vicens feels like he just can't start those players every single game for fitness reasons. So listen, there's a lot that could kind of could be playing into these kind of performances. Although listen, if they want to be successful in Europe, they're going to have to juggle these for a large part of the season. So they've got to get their act together fairly soon. But yeah, still a few goals, so and a good win. So it's not all, as Kev says, not all doom and gloom. Before we go, Kev, I know you watched Vitória 3, Estoril 2. I've watched the highlights. We were treated to a pretty mad game. I think we should just spend a couple of minutes mentioning that. It was good for Vitória to bounce back from opening day defeat, although they did go behind. To a goal from Rafik Gaitán. They came back with a 2-1. They then conceded, and then they get the third goal with the penalty. So a very, very crazy game, but Vitória found a way to get the job done, which I think is important after losing to Porto on the first day of the season.
100%. Vitória, at the end of the day, they're not going to be too upset at any point because that first game was very, very disappointing on a lot of levels, individually and as a collective. And a lot of players gave responses in this match. I think both Thiago Silva and Handel, they had good games respectively, just the way that they dictated play and the service that they give going forward to the forward players is always exceptional. It's two players to have in midfield, that's a luxury at this level. I think even Porto, Sporting, and Benfica, in a way, they would be more than happy to have both of these players among their ranks, which is just a real praise to these two individually. I think the likes of Van Felix did a lot better, had quite a few moments where he created quite a bit and beat his man. Obviously, defensively, there is that sort of question mark around him because he does not look like a player with the intelligence or the know-how to be playing a wing-back role, which there is that certain responsibility. More when you have Maga behind him, who, again, doesn't look like a right centre-back, doesn't look like it's the right fit. Other than that, Charles had a good game. I'll say that. I think he made some very good saves. Whether he could do better on Gitan's effort, I'm not too sure, but then again, It's pretty much what I did say. He is a very hot and cold goalkeeper, and this was a very hot and cold game at the end of the day, because and the man I'm going to mention now, I'm not even going to mention anyone from Studil. It's just Nelson Oliveira, and the moment that he had near half time where Vitória score a goal and he's going to the Studil players, getting in their faces, celebrating, and then before the game even starts up again, he's in their faces again. He gets the yellow card, trying to use perhaps his experience despite him getting a yellow card, trying to provoke someone and get something off of them, and then he ends up with a goal in the game. It's just poetic. It's
You can't teach that,
beautiful in a
Kevin.
way.
You can't teach that kind of experience.
It was in the scoreline and throughout the game, and in those moments, just that's a little bit more off the pitch, if that makes sense, or those on it. It wasn't football being played. This was just chaos. This was another typical Liga Portugal game. He had moments of brilliance. He had good players, likes of Handel, Silva, like I've mentioned, Gitan on the other side, all brilliant. But again, you do have this sort of drama that goes on. You do have a few moments which baffle anyone, like the own goal from Abascal. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, this was it's a difficult one to analyze because I'm not even sure what we analyze. I don't think we can say that either collective played particularly well. There were moments, there were individuals, but yeah, what a game just for someone who's looking for a bit of entertainment at the weekend, honestly.
I mean, isn't that what it's all about at the end of the day? That's what we're all here for. And I think it was a bit of a spectacle. And the only thing I'll say on Estoril is, listen, they started last season slowly, only a point against Estrela Amadora, nothing against Vitória. It's not to say that, they're not going to get something from the next game or they won't improve, but we saw it last year. And even when I looked at the squad, they had some good players, of course, Bregaglia, Gitan, Carvalho, the winger I like, Colesgrove, of course, the keeper I like, Robles. The defense doesn't look amazing. Pizzi's not ready to start the games, so
Depaula looked good coming on. I'll give him that.
true, true, true. So I mean, we have high hopes for Estoril from last season. And what they were able to achieve with their form at the end of the year. But, listen, I think it would probably be wise to maybe just add a grain of salt to that, this is still not a team with the best squad in the league, and they'd need to overperform if they were going to kind of finish above what they did last season. But I very much hope that's what they do this season, and we'll be keeping an eye on them. Gentlemen, I think we'll leave it there for this week's episode. A lot of great games that have been discussed, and I'm sure it'll be the same next weekend. We'll be back next week to discuss all the games from Granada through the Primeira Liga season. But yeah, just leaves me to say a big thank you for listening, and we'll see you again next week.